It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
More than 120,000 in attendance at the new cricket stadium. And what really struck me was the remarks and the way they were received. It was overwhelmingly warmly received by the people in attendance. The president celebrating the long-standing and enduring relationship between our two countries, the two largest democracies in the world. The president also went to great lengths to hail the burgeoning business ties between the U.S. and India. Listen here.
Since my inauguration, commerce between our two nations has increased by more than 40%. India is now a major market for American exports, and the United States is India's largest export market. A booming America is a great thing for India. And it's great for the world.
We're looking at basically the rest of the day being spent en route here to New Delhi. You saw the rally earlier, of course, the visit to the Taj Mahal, which will be coming up here shortly. The president will overnight here. And then tomorrow there's a huge opening ceremony event here in New Delhi. That'll be followed by bilateral and business meetings and then a state dinner tomorrow night. The big agenda item is trade. You heard the president talking about how positive things have been and how they're moving in the right direction. We expect to get a lot more, including a readout on that. But for now, guys, back to you.
Kevin Cork this morning on Fox and Friends, and Sandy Rios with you this morning. The president, of course, as you know, is in India. India, as Winston Churchill used to say. And he had his rally as while we were sleeping to 110,000 people in the cricket stadium. I think of the sport, cricket. Let's see, not baseball, not football, cricket, the cricket stadium. I know India is... For most of you, probably sort of a vague understanding. Probably most of you have not been there, and it is a strange place to many of us because their customs, their religions are so very different. By the way, there are many, many Indian Christians, a lot of Christian pastors. I actually had the privilege of being there several years ago and meeting with them, and there was a lot of conflict between them and the Buddhists. They were being really tormented, and so there was a lot of persecution. I guess that's the word I was looking for. But you have to imagine, and India is so big, it's so huge, and has so many different kinds of people. There are like over 200 different languages in India itself, language groups. Can you imagine that? But India, you know, has while. People haven't reported too much in India. There isn't a lot of news about India. They're not part of the European Union. They're not part of the West. But meanwhile, they have been increasing their gross domestic product. They have been becoming an economic powerhouse. They are educating their people. As you know, so many Indian doctors and engineers, brilliant people, they have been sort of becoming a world power without anyone noticing. And so it's really important to have a good relationship with India, and they really are actually strong allies of ours. Despite maybe some disagreements, they are strong allies. And it's really pretty incredible that the president is reaching out to them. I think it's very important, I guess is what I'm trying to say, as a strategic partnership in this world. And so when I think of India, I'll just say personally, I had a wonderful time in India. I rode up in the back of a Jeep up a long highway watching monkeys bounce from tree to tree. It was like a five-hour trip. I was in the central part of India and then all the way up to northern India, and I could tell you lots of stories, but it would take me the rest of the show to tell you some of the things that happened to me, like with a snake charmer, just some kind of fun stories. But the Indian people are actually delightful. They love family. Family's very important to them. The women are beautiful. They have the most beautiful cloth and that they create and colors, as you well know. So probably some of you know more about it because there have been a lot of movies now made in India and a lot of Indian movies made that have become more mainstream. But I just want to underscore that this is not a fluke. It's not just some side trip. This is actually very important strategic partnership. And as you watch it, again, your eyes are going to see things you're not used to seeing. Some of Indian culture is still very primitive. But in many ways, they have become Western in terms of their economics and understanding of the world, I guess. And because there's so many Indian Americans, of course, that has influenced how people back in India feel about the country. So we have a natural ally there and an important one, I think. Certainly an ally against the strength of China as it builds up its military in further east and closer to India. All right, so enough about India for today. We may come back to that. Maybe I'll tell you that Snake Charmer story on a different day, but not today. Well, we might have a new president. Well, if President Trump gets defeated by the nominee who won in Nevada, that was Bernie Sanders. He won by almost 50% of the vote. Joe Biden, 20.4%. Pete Buttigieg, 13.9%. Elizabeth Warren, 9.8%. Tom Steyer, 4.6%. Amy Klobuchar, 4.2%. And other people I don't even recognize, a few points here and there. But that was the Nevada caucuses. I found it really interesting that the Nevada caucus participants had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, that they would not say anything about what they had found. I mean, there were a lot of, I guess my eye went up when I saw that former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, operatives with ties to him are running the caucuses. And I know what that means. Harry Reid is as corrupt, just corrupt, a very corrupt man. And Nevada's politics have been corrupt for many, many years. And I see that now they're still involved, Mr. Harry Reid. So that says a lot. We know that they actually opened up for early voting, 4 days of early voting before they went into the caucuses, which the caucus, I guess that would be, which makes no sense the way caucuses operate. Don't ask me to explain it. I don't know. I don't see how you can vote in early voting and then have caucuses where people go in a room and gather in corners to support certain candidates. But no one could talk about it because they had to sign confidentiality agreements. Pete Buttigieg is protesting the results because he thinks there was some monkey business. Oh, no, surely not. But that's what's happening. And I thought you might want to hear what your future Democratic president, you know, has to say about things because he's full of ideas. And here he is, Bernie Sanders, clip 11.
Today, we got 500,000 people sleeping out on the streets of America. Today, we have 18 million families paying 50% of their limited incomes for housing. Today, we have hundreds of thousands of bright young people who cannot afford to get a higher education. Today, we have 45 million people paying a student debt that many of them cannot afford to pay. So what our campaign is about and what our administration will be about is rethinking America, understanding that all of our people, when I say all, I also mean the undocumented in this country. That all of our people are entitled to basic human rights.
Yeah, so, you know, I am actually, my pedicures and manicures are costing me a lot. I'm hoping that he'll add that to his list of things to pay for. And undocumented immigrants should also have pedicures and manicures. So should little girls. You notice there's a lot of little girls in nail salons. I think they have a right, don't they, to have pedicures and manicures. And so I think that Bernie Sanders should take that on also. You know, Bernie Sanders is, he's a socialist / communist. And we're going to talk a great deal about that, actually, in the coming days. I laugh about it, but it's not funny. It's not funny. And when we see our kids, they'll get their college loans paid for. Wouldn't that be great? Maybe our mortgages will be paid for. Oh, no, not yours and mine. Just other people, the people deemed worthy, the underdogs or whatever Bernie Sanders qualifies people as needing help, those people will get things free. But the rest of us will pay. Oh, we'll pay, all right. And the country will, of course, slump into something you don't even describe. Bernie's not even hiding the fact that he wants to completely transform the country. He's not hiding that. He wants this to be a different America, one that looks a little bit more like Venezuela, Cuba. He always loved Fidel. He honeymooned in Moscow. Those are his favorite haunts. So that's what he has in mind for all of us. I think it was interesting. Nicole Wallace was talking with James Carville on MSNBC. And just listen to how James characterizes. He just hints at Bernie Sanders and the way he operates. This is clip 5.
The Sanders campaign and the Trump campaign, they've taken these things to dark arts of abusing the press, of bullying the press. I mean, what do we miss in terms of paying attention to a squeaky, angry minority and ignoring the majority?
Right. I don't know. Everybody complains to me in the media and the press. I said, I don't know how to tell you this. The press has not near as much power as they had when I was young. Remember, mm-hmm. Lyndon Johnson said, if I lost the war because I lost Walter Cronkite?
Yeah.
I mean, if you lose Wolf Blitzer, you're not going to lose anything. I mean, that's just the way America, and I don't mean to pick on Wolf, I like him, I would say the same thing about any of our hosts on my own network right now. It just had this diffusion of media power and media authority, and you're right, Trump and Bernie Sanders are able to, the happiest person right now, it's about 1:15 Moscow time. This thing is going very well for Vladimir Putin. I promise you. He's probably staying up watching us right now. How you doing, Vlad?
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, all right. Well, there were three things I could talk about in that, but I want you to hear the first part where Nicole Wallace talks about the dark arts of Bernie Sanders. I want to concentrate on that for a second. Because the Bernie bros, you know, have been leading these Antifa rallies, attacking people left and right. And it's interesting to me to hear the leftist press now complaining. Keith Ellison was trying to push back on the Bernie bros are not so bad. Keith Ellison, the Democratic Minnesota Attorney General, Thursday, he tweeted out that he had never seen any supporter of Democrat presidential candidate Bernie Sanders acting unusually mean. And he challenged the internet to provide an example. This is what he said exactly. I've never seen at Bernie Sanders supporters being unusually mean or rude. Can someone send me an example of a Bernie bro being bad? Also, are we holding all candidates responsible for the behavior of their supporters? Then he said, taunting, waiting to hear. Well, Congressman Scalise responded to Ellison in a consequent tweet and said, I can think of an example. And, of course, he's referring to being shot and nearly killed by a Bernie supporter at that ballpark in Alexandria, Virginia, where the Bernie Sanders supporter intended to kill, a mass murder, all the Republicans playing in the ball field. So Scalise thought of an example. And then there was interesting because a Carrie Pettibaker, who's treasurer of the Democratic National Committee's Black Caucus, wrote, Keith, here's an example. This was just last week. This user said that I was blanking, gross, and should meet a bus, meaning I should be hit by a bus. And read the user's timeline, you'll see he's a Sanders supporter. And then, of course, I thought about Project Veritas going underground, talking about that Sanders supporter in Iowa, the field operator and the one in South Carolina, who wanted to send Republicans to the gulag, who wanted to line them up and shoot them. Remember that? Oh, gosh, I guess Keith is just kind of not missing out on a few things, isn't he? Those are the Bernie bros. This is actually very dangerous. I may be sounding like I'm just kind of incredulous that Bernie Sanders should be heading, and he has more delegates than anyone so far, and Super Tuesday's coming up probably, I think, a week from tomorrow, and he's doing very well. So the socialist, the communist, the radical leftists whose followers want to put people, conservatives who really love this country, believe in the Constitution, in gulags. Fasten your seatbelts. This is going to get interesting. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
Eight Days of Hope needs volunteers to help flood victims in Jackson, Mississippi. Efforts will continue through March 14th.
Visit 8daysofhope.com to learn more and volunteer. Here's 8 Days of Hope President Steve Tiber.
We're looking for people who just want to serve others. You know, you don't have to be super gifted. Every disaster gives an opportunity for a believer to share a glimpse of Jesus Christ. On a moment's notice, your life can change, and you don't know what to do, and all of a sudden you get a knock on your door, and there's a dozen volunteers that have come from all over the country, and homeowners usually, they just start to weep. They're so blown away that volunteers they don't even know would come to their house to help them. That's the hands and feet of Jesus Christ.
Volunteers must be 18 years or older. Food and lodging are provided, but bring your own bedding. Come help flood victims in Jackson, Mississippi. Visit 8daysofhope.com. That's 8daysofhope.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for James Murray, Director of the United States Secret Service. As director, he oversees the agency that protects our nation's leaders. John 15:13 reminds us of the incredible sacrifice risked each day by the members of the Secret Service. Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for James Murray as he leads the U.S. Secret Service. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and folks, Liberty University believes a private Christian education should be affordable to everyone. That's great, right? It doesn't matter if you're from California or Maine or anywhere in between, you may qualify for up to $20,780 over 4 years through Liberty's Middle America Scholarship. For more information, text MAS to the number 839-858 today. Again, that's MAS to the number 839-858. The nation's largest non-Catholic denomination is in trouble, and that's a big problem for America. For decades, the Southern Baptist Convention has been at the forefront of the so-called culture war. But in recent years, the convention has disengaged. And even more troubling, there's been a movement to embrace social justice, critical race theory, and never Trumpism. When Vice President Mike Pence spoke at the 2018 annual meeting of the SBC, some Baptists walked out of the room. Southern Baptist Convention President J.D. Greer recently posted a podcast calling for people to use what he called pronoun hospitality when dealing with transgender people. But now a very large group of Southern Baptist pastors and laypeople are fighting back. The Conservative Baptist Network launched today, committed to what they called a second conservative resurgence. Let's hope it works. America needs Southern Baptist. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Roger Stone walked out of federal court today, a free man for the moment, after District Judge Amy Berman Jackson sentenced him to 40 months in prison. A gag order still in place, Stone said nothing as he ran a gauntlet of cameras.
Pardon Roger Stone!
In Las Vegas, hours later, President Trump had plenty to say, that Stone was treated unfairly and deserves the new trial he is asking for.
I want to see it play out to its fullest because Roger has a very good chance of exoneration, in my opinion.
The president insisted Stone was never part of his campaign and dismissed Stone's actions as Roger being Roger.
Roger's definitely a character. Everybody sort of knows Roger. He's a little different, but those are sometimes the most interesting.
Judge Jackson appeared to disagree with President Trump, pulling no punches with Stone, saying, "This is not campaign hijinks. This is not Roger just being Roger. He lied to Congress. He lied to our elected representatives."
The sentence was less than half of what prosecutors had initially recommended, 7 to 9 years, and right in line with what a revised DOJ recommendation suggested was fair. Judge Jackson, an Obama appointee, also dismissed President Trump's claims that this was a partisan witch hunt, saying Stone was not standing up for the president. He was prosecuted for covering up for the president. The next step is whether Judge Jackson will order a retrial. Stone is alleging political bias on the part of the jury forewoman in his initial court case and got backup today from the president.
This is a woman who was an anti-Trump person, totally.
But the judge today praised the jury, saying they served with integrity under difficult circumstances.
Judge Jackson today said that Stone's utter disrespect for the rule of law was worthy as punishment. She described him in open court as a bare-knuckle brawler who engages in political dirty tricks. But she also said that the DOJ's initial sentencing recommendation of 7 to 9 years was greater than was necessary.
John Roberts always loves to put things the way he puts things. Sandy Rios with you. So the upshot from that is that Roger Stone is a really bad character. Judge Amy Berman Jackson was just, she after all did not do what the prosecutors ask and give him 7 to 9 months. She gave him a fair judgment. And of course, the president says it was an unfair trial. Not that everyone says it was an unfair trial, but that the president says. And so that's John's spin on it. But I'll tell you what the story is here. Judge Amy Berman Jackson, again, an Obama appointee, is the one that put Paul Manafort in solitary confinement. She slapped Roger Stone with a gag order. This is really strange. I've heard law enforcement say, former prosecutors say, they've never heard of a judge slapping a gag order for such a long time. Roger Stone was not even allowed to talk to anyone about what was happening to him. Now, Roger Stone he's a gadfly. He really is a strange character. So I would never go to, I am not saying that he's not guilty of anything ever. He probably is. But in this case, the facts are also true that in his trial, he was very poorly treated. He was really, arrested in the early morning hours. His wife is disabled, and they had no respect for him. And the FBI called CNN and had them there watching, filming it, and reporting it early. Even that in itself is disgusting. And as I understand it, normal procedure, especially with a nonviolent person like that, is that you call ahead of time and you say, we're coming to your home. We need you to be at your door in 5 minutes. Do not destroy anything. We don't want to have to knock down a door. Please just come right to the doorway. Can you get there by that time? Okay, yes, sir. And then you go to the door and you do it to someone like Roger Stone, who does not have any kind of a criminal record, and he's there with his wife alone in the house sleeping. But they didn't do that. They made a big grandstand. They banged on the door. They shouted. They put searchlights in his windows, and treated him very badly. Kind of like they did Paul Manafort, but Judge Amy Berman Jackson, all right. So then here's the problem. Jackson presided over this jury selection that was so tainted. The foreman of the jury was a complete partisan hack. She had run for some Democratic post before. She was tweeting regularly. She called President Trump the Klan president. She said his supporters are racists. She tweeted about the Mueller report, about the Mueller investigation, but that she lied when she was asked about whether she was involved. And she said, she would not be partial, and she didn't have, just had a passing interest in it, but that was not true. Also, someone else in the jury was married to a Justice Department official who was bringing the prosecution against Roger Stone. And there's a third person on there who was on the jury, who was allowed to be on the jury, who was a person who donated to several Democratic candidates. So, I mean, it's really, it's the stuff of the reason why you have a retrial. That is just, I'm not sure exactly what to call it where the judge is concerned, because she certainly knew about the foreman and she allowed her to be. I think a challenge was raised by Stone's attorneys and she ignored the challenge and allowed that foreman to stay on the jury. So that is just wrong. And so, I don't know what's going to happen, because she's the one that has to grant him another trial. So if she doesn't do that, You know, I don't know what kind of jeopardy she's in. This is where John Roberts and the courts need to police their own. But I don't have confidence that John Roberts is going to police his own. Do you? Instead, he seems to be, you know, coming after President Trump when he can. Now, I haven't heard from him since the impeachment trial. I don't know if that's sort of altered John Roberts' understanding of the universe right now. I hope so, because perhaps he's seen something he had not seen before. But I don't know that. So we are in a fight for our life as a country. The deep state has gotten so deep in judicial benches, in appointments, in the Justice Department, that there's going to have to be a tremendous purge. And as a matter of fact, it sounds like something like that is underway. And I'm going to share with you a lot of things as much as I can here. Interestingly enough, former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder lost his temper last week when he was interacting with Paul Sperry. Now, Paul is someone I quote a lot. Paul was with Real Clear Politics, used to be with Investors Business Daily. He is a really tough investigative reporter, kind of like Catherine Herridge, like a no-nonsense, and he gets in there and digs and finds all kinds of stuff. And so he wrote, breaking, Molly Gaston, the assistant U.S. attorney who signed letter to McCabe's lawyer, informing McCabe, this is Andrew McCabe, the former acting FBI director after Comey was fired, informing McCabe she was closing the criminal case against him. She is a Democrat who's given thousands to Democrats, including President Obama, and who once worked for the Democratic side of House oversight, and whose mother worked for the Washington Post. That's what Paul Sperry discovered in his investigation. Well, so Eric Holder responded online to Perry, why don't you shut the blank up? Your bias is showing. I bet you've never been a prosecutor. I've had any idea how DOJ works. People like you who want to use the justice system for political reasons are both dangerous and ignorant. The case was like you, an obvious loser. Well, that's the former Attorney General of the United States, known as President Obama's body man. He always had his back, still does. Losing his temper just a little bit, showing who he really is. And do you think for a minute Eric Holder did not use the Justice Department for political ends? It was under Eric Holder that the new Black Panthers were never prosecuted. Even though the case was made, they were intimidating people at the voting booth. I remember seeing the video of it. They're walking around with weapons over their shoulders as people were coming in to vote, and they were prosecuted by the Justice Department. That's how Christian Adams, who often hosts the show and is just a wonderful writer and is spending now his time in trying to make sure elections are fair and open. But Christian was working on that case and resigned. He was an original whistleblower with the Justice Department that was under Eric Holder. So how dare he say that Paul Sperry, by simply writing the truth about this, is trying to politicize the Justice Department. But then again, we find out more. Mr. Holder is currently a partner of Covington & Burling, which is the same law firm where Gaston, now that's Molly, she's the one that wrote the letter telling McCabe he would not be prosecuted. She's the one who's given thousands to Democrats, including President Obama. Her mother works for the Washington Post. So we know that Mr. Holder works as a partner in the same law firm where Molly Gaston's dad is senior counsel. Oh, gee, there's kind of a nice cozy relationship there. So maybe that's the reason Eric Holder is saying, why don't you shut the blank up? Yeah, to Paul Sperry. Very dignified, don't you think? I guess I view that kind of as a good sign because it sounds like Eric Holder's getting upset and worried. And I'm so glad he's getting upset and worried. Eric Holder is the one who was held in contempt by Congress for that secret gun running scheme where they sent guns into Mexico to the cartels. No one has ever explained what that was all about, and one of our agents, at least one of them, was killed by one of those guns. At least one of them. All right, so now we've got McCabe, he's not being prosecuted, but Roger Stone, who allegedly lied to Congress, the House Intelligence Committee under, who was it? Adam Schiff. He lied to them, allegedly, and so he is, going to get, 3 years in prison, but Andrew McCabe, not so much, and James Comey, not so much, and Peter Strzok, not so much, and Lisa Page, not so much, and others, on and on we could go. And so I think the president is fed up, and there's so many things I want to tell you. I think I'm going to have to morph into this because this is actually such an important story, and I want you to be encouraged. Absolutely, there is a move underway to purge the intelligence agencies and to do something about what's happening at Justice. I've never seen people that I know well as encouraged as they are, and I'm one of them. I'm encouraged, too. So over the weekend, the president put Richard Grenell, who is the current ambassador to Germany, in charge of the intelligence agencies. It's a temporary assignment, and yet Richard Grenell right away began firing people because the president has made it clear he intends to clean out the swamp. He put, of course, a good friend of his, John McEntee, ahead of the presidential personnel office. And I'm sure that I've told you, it's that the person heading the presidential personnel office was a person closely affiliated with John Boehner, who hated Trump. Johnny DiStefano was his name. It's not a secret. It's been in print. And people were trying to get the president to fire him a long time ago because really good people were applying for jobs, and the resumes were just ending up in the trash. And so what we ended up with was never Trumpers, people tied to the establishment Republicans, and Obama appointees. And that's the problem we've been having for the last 3 years. So John McEntee has now been appointed, and he's in charge of all political appointees to the administration. And by the way, John's history was that he was fired and escorted off the premises at the command of former White House Chief of Staff John Kelly in 2018. John was fired, walked off the premises. And you know John Kelly is, of course, now waxing eloquent about his time in the White House. Suddenly, he's found his voice criticizing the president. And you see how bad this was. You know, John Kelly, from my understanding, at that time, we all wondered, was just kind of shutting the president off from information, trying to control the flow, and a president was persuaded to trust him, and he was not trustworthy. He might have been a great general who certainly lost his son in one of the wars, and everyone, that's just a reason to respect him and admire his service, but politically, he's lost. You know, it's like, to me, when I hear John talk, it's as though, you know, he gets his news from the Washington Post, the New York Times. And that's what he thinks is reality, and it is not. And so he felt, I think, it was his duty to undermine the president. And so part of that was marching John McEntee off the premises. But John's back, as is Hope Hicks, who was also fired. So now Richard Grenell is going to be the acting director of National Intelligence. And there's a great move afoot to purge many people who are never Trumpers. There's a lot to say about that. It reminds me of a story that I haven't told you when I talked about people not getting jobs with the administration and really good people being passed over. I think of someone that you, whose name you know, who you've heard me interview many times at this microphone, who was one of the founders of the Department of Homeland Security, who wrote a book called See Something, Say Nothing. Phil Haney was a former entomologist in his early life. He studied insects and the way they grouped in species. He was very good at what he did, but he ended up being in Homeland Security and instead tracking different groups of Islamists, and he became an expert at that. And Phil's story is that the Obama administration under Eric Holder ended up forcing Phil and others to purge his files, all of his investigations. They ended up putting him in an office and isolating him because if he had quit, he would have lost all of his pension, all of his many years at federal employment. And so then he ended up writing a book and being a whistleblower before the Congress. And he was a guest of ours many, many times. Phil was found dead, shot over the weekend in California. And we don't know what the story is. It's shocking to all of us that know him. We are awaiting investigation. The police out there are declaring it suicide, but people close to him are saying there is no way. Phil was working on another book. I heard from him just a couple of weeks ago. People who know him well, and I don't claim to that, I know him pretty well, but I was not near him now, do not think there's any way that Phil would have committed suicide. So there are efforts being made right now. to find out what the real story is. But I wanted to bring you that sad news and remind you that he was one of the many champions who was never hired because of the bad people surrounding the president. That's how important what's happening is now. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And do not give the devil an opportunity. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. The Boy Scouts of America was founded in 1910 for boys. They were sued in the 80s to include women as scoutmasters. In 2013, they admitted homosexual scouts. In 2015, they welcomed homosexual scoutmasters. In 2016, they welcomed transgender scouts. In 2020, the Boy Scouts of America, with over $1.4 billion in assets, filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They crumbled under the weight of 12,254 children on record who'd been abused by no less than 7,819 predators. The moment you compromise biblical standards is the moment you declare bankruptcy, with or without a courtroom.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. We as God's people need to be good stewards of all that He has given us. That is so important, and that's what drives me each day as I break down the latest financial numbers and talk to listeners across the country about their use of the money that God has entrusted to them. Join me each morning from 8 to 10 Central and Saturday mornings at 10 o'clock Central Time for Financial Issues right here on American Family Radio.
All throughout Scripture, from Old Testament through in the New Testament, you see three categories or groups of people usually listed together that are close to God's heart.
Yes.
Whether society or even God's people, the church even, neglects or forgets about them, God is always paying close attention to strangers, orphans, and widows.
Exploring Missions with Bert Harper, Saturday evenings at 6:30 Central and Sunday afternoons at 1 on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. There is a well-established connection between homosexuality and pedophilia. Although homosexuals comprise less than 3% of the population, they are responsible for more than 33% of all cases of the sexual abuse of children. The Boy Scouts have had a problem with this for decades and recently made things immeasurably worse by allowing open homosexuals to serve as scoutmasters. The level of unchecked abuse has reached critical mass and forced the BSA into bankruptcy. This once noble organization may be removed from the face of the earth because it turned a blind eye to this problem. Fortunately, Trail Life USA has arisen to give young boys a homosexual-free scouting experience. The wages of sin is death, and the Boy Scouts are learning that lesson the hard way.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Phil Haney was a bug guy and a national treasure, an entomologist who proudly described how his skills in classification, following the focuses of his intensive research to the nest, helped protect America against Sharia supremacists at home and abroad. Phil was a founding member of the Department of Homeland Security, where he performed such work brilliantly for Customs and Border Patrol for 15 years. During much of that time, he was highly acclaimed by his superiors for ferreting out some 300 terrorists. But in the Obama administration, his work was unwelcome, harassed, and punished. Phil was subjected to 9 different investigations, but fully exonerated each time. He retired and courageously blew the whistle on the Islamists and leftists who are still endangering us all. Phil Haney died of a gunshot wound last week. Freedom is less secure today as a result. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We've talked a lot over the last 3 years, Director Brennan, about the institutions holding in the face of President Trump. What does that look like right now as we talk specifically about the intelligence services? If there is this, as you put it, decapitation at the top of these organizations, how does that institution hold?
Oh, that's a good question, Willie. And I'm hoping that the intelligence professionals are going to continue to do their best to provide the intelligence and the analysis that the executive branch as well as the legislative branch needs. They need to try to do it despite the headwinds that they're feeling coming from the White House. Now, a lot of these individuals, I'm sure, are being intimidated and now are going to be pulling some punches because they don't want to be shown the door. It's one thing for the senior professionals to be axed. But is the White House going to start going down further now and trying to remove intelligence professionals who are just trying to do their job but are going to face the wrath of a very vindictive Donald Trump?
So what's your message then to your former colleagues who are still fighting the fight inside the intelligence services?
Carry out those responsibilities that you swore an oath to do. Because they have that very solemn responsibility, whether you're intelligence or in a diplomat or in law enforcement, you need to carry out your responsibilities with the greatest integrity and honesty and let the chips fall where they may. I would tell them not to go to the door, not to leave, continue to do their work the best they can.
Thank you, John Brennan. Now, you would know about undermining, wouldn't you, John? And of course, John is the one, I believe, who started the entire Russia hoax. Oh, well, he had his part in it. I remember Jay Johnson was the very first person. I swear I was watching television live when it happened. And I said to my husband, what is he talking about? It was before the 2016 election. And Jay Johnson just dropped into the conversation that they expected Russia to try to interfere with the election. And no one had ever said that. And I said to my husband, they are planting a seed. They are laying the groundwork for something. And little did I know what kind of a seed it was going to be planted. But I want to, before I get into that, actually, because now they're doing it again, I want to just say John Brennan sounds nervous, and he should be, because the intelligence agencies are being rooted out. The president is really serious about this. Rick Grenell, the ambassador to Germany, is now the acting head of the NSC. But Richard is not going to take it over permanently. The president is looking for a permanent appointment. Meanwhile, though, let me tell you some really good news. This is a name that you won't know, but Kash Patel has been appointed to be the right-hand man to Richard Grenell. Why is that important? Because Kash Patel is the guy who knows all about this. He served as an aide to the House Intelligence Committee under Devin Nunes. He has now been appointed to be the senior advisor to Richard Grenell, who was the acting director of National Intelligence. So the mandate is to clean house, top to bottom, and Richard Grenell has already been firing people. Let me read this to you. This is from the Examiner. Patel was the primary author of a Republican memo released in early 2018 on alleged Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act abuses against Carter Page. The report, which was released in December, said there were at least 17 significant errors or omissions in the Page FISA applications. It was Kash Patel, who wrote that memo. Patel later became the senior counterterrorism director for the National Security Council. Late last year, he got wrapped up, according to the Examiner, into the House Democrats' impeachment investigation. He denied being a back channel to Trump on Ukraine, as one witness had suggested, and he filed a $25 million libel suit against Politico over reporting that claimed he was feeding Trump information about Ukraine. He also targeted House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, tying him to leaks from the closed-door hearings during the impeachment investigation into Trump. So the lawsuit, by the way, that Cash filed said that Politico was trying to destroy his reputation. So Cash is a fighter, and if Cash says it, it's true. I'm telling you, Devin Nunes has tremendous staff around him, and now actually Cash is going to be the information man for Richard Grenell, who is coming from outside, but Cash knows all the inside. And just watch. This is going to be interesting. By the way, this is a sidebar, but I have to tell you, John Bolton broke his silence last Wednesday. He was appearing next to Susan Rice, of all things, which kind of gave me the shiver. She was his counterpart under the Obama administration, and I don't trust Susan at all. I think she's a pathological liar. She's the one who went on the Sunday shows to tell us the Benghazi attack was all about this video that had been circulated. It was our fault, you see, because a video criticizing Islam had been seen by some of the Islamists. That's just one of the many things that Susan did. But anyway, Bolton was at an event appearing with her, answering questions, and basically I think they got stuff they weren't expecting, because he said that his testimony, which the Democrats were so seeking, would not have changed the outcome of the Senate impeachment trial. He believed that the House, quote, committed impeachment malpractice, end quote. And the AP reported that drew grumbling from the office, the audience. Bolton also noted that the manner in which the Democrats handled the impeachment, quote, drove Republicans who might have voted for impeachment away because it was so partisan. He also said that contrary to claims by Democrats who called upon him to testify, he does not believe that his testimony would have changed the final impeachment outcome. So I just wanted to share that because that's been kind of dangling. It's interesting to hear John say that. Meanwhile, we have a new story. We have a new story, and you'll never guess what it is. The story is that Russia is interfering with our elections and that they're trying to help President Trump. And so Lawrence O'Donnell, you know, on MSNBC, put it very eloquently. Let's listen to Lawrence, clip 7.
We begin tonight with another test of America's ability to be shocked by Donald Trump, who has very deliberately shocked America to the point where he hopes that shock has been replaced by acceptance. The president is a Russian operative. That sounds like the description of a bad Hollywood screenplay, but it is real. And it is Vladimir Putin's greatest achievement. Decades after America's victory in the Cold War and the collapse of the Soviet Union,
all right,
the president
okay, you
of
get
the United
it. The
States
president,
is now...
Lawrence says, is a Russian asset. He is. He just is. You thought he wasn't, but now, no, we know that he is. Eric Swalwell on CNN said much the same. Let's listen to Eric Swalwell.
Did Russia's efforts to help Bernie Sanders in the presidential election come up at that briefing you attended last week?
Can't go into anything about the briefing. I did ask Director Wray at a Judiciary Committee hearing 2 weeks ago if Russia was still interfering, and he plainly said yes. What I will say, though, and first credit to Bernie Sanders for disavowing what they're doing, for acknowledging that he was briefed and also saying, Putin, I'm not going to put up with it. The real question, though, is did Donald Trump know that Russia had a preference for Bernie Sanders? Because Donald Trump, for the past few months, has constantly, not so subtly and consistently, been tweeting that his preferred candidate, essentially, is Bernie Sanders. So the question is he taking intelligence that he's getting and then feeding it back to be aligned with Russia so he gets the candidate he wants in the general?
This is really interesting. Let's get this straight. President Trump is a Russian asset, according to Lawrence O'Donnell. And so the story that we've been hearing, which I'm going to explain a little bit better in a minute, is that Russia wants, another report is that they want Bernie Sanders. In fact, Bernie Sanders was actually briefed about the Russians wanting him to be elected. This is so ridiculous. But Swalwell's theory is that the president has influenced Russia, and so Russia's trying to help President Trump by making Bernie Sanders the presidential candidate. Because that's going to help President Trump. That's what he's saying. Bernie was briefed on this, and he had some statements about this. Let's listen to Bernie Sanders.
The intelligence community is telling us they are interfering in this campaign right now in 2020. And what I say to Mr. Putin, if elected president, trust me, you are not going to be interfering in American elections.
When were you briefed on this?
I'm guessing about a month ago.
And what are you going to do now that you know this?
Well, it was not clear what role they're going to play. We were told that Russia, maybe other countries, are going to get involved in this campaign. And look, here is the message to Russia. Stay out of American elections. And what they are doing, by the way, the ugly thing that they are doing, and I've seen some of their, you know, their tweets and stuff, is they try to divide us up. That's what they did in 2016. And that is the ugliest thing they're doing. Is they are trying to cause chaos. They're trying to cause hatred in America. It's an ugly business, and all of us have got to say, sorry, you're not going to do this in this election. And again, as president of the United States, Mr. Putin, you will not interfere in our elections. Thanks very much.
That sounds convincing, doesn't it? I mean, that sounds frightening. That Bernie Sanders, I mean, I think Putin is probably shaking in his boots, so you will not interfere with our elections, sir. If I'm president, that's what I'm going to say. You will not just stay out of American elections. That's got some real teeth to it. And dividing, are you kidding me? You think the Bernie bros who were threatening people and talking about gulags and sending people to, you know, having a French Revolution, not lining people up and shooting them. The people that are representing his campaign in different areas, the one that, you know, shot Steve Scalise and tried to kill all those congressmen, those are the people supporting Bernie Sanders. Those are the Bernie bros. And don't think he doesn't know about it. And remember, he never once distanced himself from the two that we know. James O'Keefe did interviews or undercover videos that they didn't know they were being recorded with the field manager of Bernie's campaign in Iowa and in South Carolina. And they said horrific things about the plans they have for you and for me, people that love this country. And Bernie never once said anything in criticism, didn't ask them to step down. He acted as though it never happened. So he's telling us, the Russians are trying to divide us as he's out there talking, telling people at his rallies how badly treated they are, how mistreated are the 1%, they get everything. And you deserve, you don't have adequate health care. And you know, you're so mistreated. This is his theme, dividing people. That's what communists do. They divide people so that they will turn against each other so that they can ride in as the champion. So Bernie's going to be the champion, and that means he's going to promise you everything for free. But, of course, not everyone can have everything for free. So that means that all of us will have practically nothing or the same piddly amount. That's what communism does. That's what socialism does. You remember that Europe is not socialism. Europe is capital. All those countries in Europe that you might want to point to are capitalistic economies. They are not socialistic. Parts of them have social programs like we do, like Social Security, Medicare, and other things like that. But their economy does not run on a socialistic model. And so don't be deceived when they point to, you know, Sweden or the Netherlands or to, I don't know, any of those countries as these great models of socialism that work. But I don't want to get off on that minute. I want to come back to this Russian collusion thing. What happened was, there was a briefing to Adam Schiff's committee. And so out of that committee came all these reports that the Russians now are trying to interfere with our election. And we've heard two things. Now, they're either trying to help President Trump or they're trying to help Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders was briefed, so maybe they were trying to help Bernie Sanders. But now we know this. Well, let me just say, President Trump has already called out Adam Schiff because, you know, Adam Schiff leaks all the time. He has a pattern of leaking to the media. And who of you thinks that he would actually not be guilty of getting some kind of damaging information out about President Trump? And who of you thinks that whatever damaging information came out would actually be true? So this is Adam Schiff's committee again, and now we're learning more because the girl who actually did the briefing is a girl named, named Pearson, Shelby Pearson. She briefed that committee on Russian election interference, but they say she might have overstated the intelligence, says this report. She has overstated the intelligence. Of course, all the ones that were in the room who have honor and integrity will not speak of what happened in that room. That's why you don't have someone running out in front of a microphone to actually say, no, she said this or she said that, because they're bound. But Adam Schiff is not bound, and his minions are not bound. They feel free to leak, you know, and then they can lie about what was said because no one ever calls them up on it. But we know a little bit more about Shelby. She was appointed by then Director of National Intelligence, Dan Coats, Dan is a, look, nice guy who turned rhino. I don't know if he was a never Trumper, but it was a mistake to appoint him. He appointed her. She was on NPR in an interview just last month talking about how the Russians are already engaging in influence operations. But, you know, they do that every year. They do that all the time, as do many, many other countries, including Ukraine. So now we have this new story, and it's, oh, by the way, Julian Assange is going to be brought back to the country, and he is the key to whether Russians interfered with the last 2016 election, and some people are worried that he will not be safe coming back here. I'll try to talk more about that tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.